I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations. Today, around the kitchen table, I have, well, three people besides myself, but only two are mostly going to be part of the conversation. So we have my husband, Mike. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
And we'll get back to you about who you are and what you do in a few seconds here. And my son, John Lustria. John, you're home on a quick little break, right? Hi.
I am. The rumors are true.
And yes, they are. And sitting next to you is your fiance, Sarah.
Hey, everybody.
And Sarah is... tell us a little bit about Sarah, John. I'll let you do that. About when you're getting married. And
she's my fiance. We're getting married this upcoming June. It's going to be very exciting. We met working at Harper's Ferry.
Well, sitting at Harper's Ferry, the town.
I was getting there. We met out in Harper's Ferry, West Virginia, working at the national park out there, which everyone should visit, by the way, if they haven't already.
Isn't this the 100th anniversary of the national park system?
2016 is, although that was in August. So
okay, well,
we're still 100.
Yeah. We've entered our 101st year by now. And she is in the field of medical lab science.
You were stealing my question. That's all right. You can do that. So I was going to ask Sarah. Sarah, you graduated and your major was?
Medical lab science with a concentration in histotechnology. So shout out to all the histologists out there. All
right, that's hard to get on a t-shirt, isn't it?
Yeah. Or a business card, right? All right. So now, of course, you have to tell people what histology is.
Yes. So histology is a study of cells. So my job is, you can take two ways. You can either go the hospital route whenever you're working in the pathology department. So we're the middlemen. So whenever you get surgery and have something taken off or out of your body, it comes to us and we make it into a slide. So that way a pathologist can read it. And then there's also the research track where kind of the same ideas and people are just trying to find new techniques to help people.
Ooh, nice. What excites you about that field? Is it that part of it, or do you just like the science of it?
It's a mix of both. Things are always changing, and with my new job that's coming up on Monday, I'm really excited for it because a lot of the things that they do, they're looking into more molecular techniques, which is where the field's really going, so that way things are more specified for patients' treatment.
So you're getting ready to work in the research field then?
Yes.
Oh, fun. Well, it's been great having you here for... I don't know, a week-ish, something like that.
Yeah,
so,
it's been a lot of fun being here.
Yay. That's nice to hear. You probably had to say that, but that's okay. just kidding. Well, thanks for popping into the podcast. Just kind of good to hear your voice and let people know a little bit about you. So let me get back here at the beginning to just a quick introduction for maybe somebody who's brand new to the podcast. And
here, I'll handle this. So Mike is a pastor at Christ Church of Oak Brook, and I'm getting my master's degree at University of South Carolina in history.
Love that.
There we go.
All right. Thank you for the introduction, because John is always telling me that I spend too much time on the introductions of the podcast.
You got to get to the good stuff.
Okay. Yeah, so
I agree.
Oh, okay. I'm trying. All right. I'll work on that. Yeah. All right. Well, yes. All right. Here we go.
I'll just say that you taught me well.
Yes.
So here we go.
I will say this. John critiques the podcast every week.
Regularly.
Lets me know.
Hopefully it's constructive.
It is pretty much.
And I don't dare because I live here.
That's funny. All right. So what's the first topic? We talked a little bit about topics and where we were going to go.
Oh, Mom's pointing at me. So we're talking about the place of sporting events in our lives. So the Cubs are in the World Series, and this is apparently a big deal out here in Chicago.
Yes, it is.
My interest does not really lie with baseball, and when it does, it dwells more with the White Sox. So I haven't been... Well, it's not that I haven't been paying attention. You can't not pay attention if you're living in Chicago.
Or really the world. This is not the world, but I mean the rest of the United States. Well, this has taken on national significance.
What it does is just points to the fact that there's a power in sports that sometimes we don't know what to deal with. We get caught up in it.
Mm-hmm. People get very passionate about sports, myself included, although I deal more with basketball.
Well, rumor has it you're a Bulls fan.
That's what they say. Yeah. The rumors are true.
So, but what about the place of sport in the larger society? I think it's important. I said this to a group of spiritual directors recently, a peer group that I meet with regularly. And I said, this has been so, I've enjoyed this so much, and I feel like, and I said, I prayed for the Cubs. I said, something feels wrong about that. But yet I feel like this is so important in the life of a city, not that it's not in the life of Cleveland as well. I know I have Cleveland listeners to the podcast and lots of friends on Facebook as well from there, but it is important, and it's, and for good reason, right? Right.
Well, I think sports it serves a variety of functions in a society. I think one, it's a release for people. Mm-hmm. It's worse, it becomes an obsession. You know, we've noticed in Chicago area, whenever one of our sports team does well, whether it's the Sox, Blackhawks, Bears, which hasn't Bulls. Happened for a long time,
well,
but Cubs, yeah. There's something that happens to the morale in the community, and it kind of takes a load off. Give something people something else to talk about, and then it, for some people though, it becomes into an obsession where they can't. That's the only thing that they talk about. It no longer becomes a release. It's almost becomes a burden.
Okay, all right. Thoughts? Other thoughts?
Yeah. Well, something that whenever this whole, because oftentimes I think some people don't really know what to do with sports because most people are interested in them, and there are also plenty of people that just don't even give a rip about sports at all, which I think is fascinating. As someone,
historians,
exactly our crowd. But anyway, there are people that don't like care about them at all, and so it's hard for me to grapple with as something like I find them to be very, I don't know, motivating, the drive of competition, and all this. But some people just don't care at all. And so people care about sports in differing degrees, and sometimes, like Mike was saying, it can grow into an obsession. And, you know, how do we kind of grapple with that and not go down a rabbit hole?
Well, and I think it's interesting. Okay, beyond the sport itself, I think one of the other pieces of this, we get attached to the people that are playing the sport.
Ah, yes.
Okay, that, you know, we feel like they belong to us, so to speak. You know, they, and I, as I look at, for instance, the Cubs team, there's a lot of talk, and you hear language like this that, you know, this group belongs to the city or whatever, or you have your favorite players and you'll read up about them, and you know, you also realize in that context and the way we view the individuals in the sport that the way they live does matter. I mean, we really do watch all that as well.
I think what's funny about sports is it brings across a passion that you never see now as in other places, like at church. You know, I'm a pastor, and you watch people, and they're kind of staid, composed. I mean, they would never raise their hands, even if you paid them to do it. They don't show expressions on their faces during a sermon or a song, and then you see a picture of them at a game, and they got their shirt off, and they're waving it above their head, hands are up in the air, and you go, well, this is doing something that our church isn't doing for them, obviously.
That's funny. That's true, though. I mean,
yeah,
there's something about the passion that comes out in sport. Well, right. And I mean, okay, so speaking of, not church, but speaking of the Bible here, you know, there are so many sporting illustrations, sure. Sport allusions, yeah. And illustrations in Scripture, too.
I fought the good fight. I'm running the
run
race.
The good race, run, you know, yeah. In such a way as to finish.
Train your body or whatever.
There you go, yeah.
Like an athlete or something,
yeah.
Like that.
Yeah.
Spiritual exercise.
Yeah, right. All of that.
Many people that are leaders in faith movements say our biggest competition is sport. The biggest competition we have is sport. In that the number one reason probably people miss church is because of their kids' sporting events.
Hmm.
And you know, some pastors really get up on their soapboxes and say, well, they've got to make priorities. And well, why are we allowing, you know, the sport leagues to infringe on Sunday morning and Saturday morning too. Well, it depends if you're a Seventh-day Adventist.
That's true.
That was a quick recover. And they're saying sport is our enemy because they're taking people away from us. And I don't know if we've done a good job of even addressing that in our culture.
Well, what do you want to say about it?
Well, I'm gonna say, yeah, it is a competition, and then I'm not sure we're ever gonna win that. Right. I think there's something you go back to.
Right, I was gonna say, I think that battle was lost a number of years ago.
I know
that was, and I think it was fought. I mean, I think you worked to fight it. When your kids were younger.
Yeah, I was the president of a soccer association, tried to fight that off, try to make sense so that the whole community could be represented in that. But it oftentimes doesn't happen. In some places where I raised my kids, for instance, you know, there were no sporting events on Jewish holidays.
Oh, interesting. Okay, yeah.
And that was just kind of a given. There's usually none on Christmas Eve or Christmas, you know, Christmas Day, that kind of thing. But sometimes we as church people have to figure out, well, how do we approach helping people become fully devoted followers of Christ, and maybe different ways, not counting on Sunday morning all the time.
Well, and I think another piece of this is, again, let's go back to relationship. To all of a sudden say, if this is the norm in the culture to now have sporting events on a Sunday, how do we develop relationships with the other parents, the other people that we're, you know, hanging out with if we all of a sudden stand up and pull our kids out? I don't know. I know people will disagree on this one, but I think it's an issue that we need to pay attention to. I don't know. What's the right thing to do? That's a hard one, right?
Well, I don't know if there is a right thing to do.
Thanks for saving me there.
The classic
historian... Of course, you don't have kids yet.
Well, that's true. The classic historian's answer is, well, is it this thing or is it this thing? Well, it's kind of both, which is the greatest... You know, we always cop out in that way, I guess. But anyway, with more and more things seemingly happening on Sunday mornings, I mean, obviously Sunday morning church services will never, ever change. I mean, there'll always be Sunday morning church services, I would presume.
There are a lot of Saturday services these
days. Yeah, I was going to say, as someone who over the summer working at Harper's Ferry, we work on Sunday mornings because that's when people go and recreate. I always find it very wonderful when churches have services that aren't only Sunday mornings. It's wonderful, but obviously that puts more of a strain on church staff or whoever else. But anyway, I appreciate that whenever I come across it.
Yeah. Well, some churches too, you know, they say, well, what's going on in our culture? In some churches up like in northern Wisconsin, northern Minnesota, they have their Sunday service on a Wednesday night or Tuesday night because they know everybody's going to the lake.
To
their cabin.
Interesting.
Their cabin.
Oh, okay.
So they'll do something like that. But there is, I think a lot of Christian people, when their kids are in sports, do develop great relationships with people who are unchurched. And I'm sure that there's invitations and, you know, being offered to come and join them for worship. My guess is in some places they're maybe not being offered just because they say, I love these people too much. I don't want them to go to a church where the pastor is going to talk about how bad sports are in our culture. You know, so I mean, there's a little bit of that. But I think people are developing relationships, and they're good relationships. And my guess is they really are having good conversations with folks somewhere along the line. At least that's my hope. I mean, that certainly happened to my... in my world.
Which if evangelism or whatever else is building relationships with people, one of the things that attracts me the most to like basketball is the sort of these intense team dynamics where, at least with basketball, the team is small enough that, you know, you really do know everyone on the team pretty well. There's only like, you know, 15 guys at most. So you build these relationships with other people, although who knows, maybe sometimes people don't get along on a team. But ideally, you're supposed to all get along because that helps you play better usually. So you're building these sort of relationships, and usually I find people don't listen to you if they have no idea who you are. And so people then know who you are, and Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, I think the other thing about sports teams, John, is a lot of sports teams have chaplains, or maybe part-time, but just somebody that the man or the woman, depending on the sport team, and their spouses can go to just to talk. There's some Bible studies that are being done, chapels on a, you know, Sunday. I had the opportunity to do that a few times for the Cubs and, for some Big Ten teams. And, you know, that was really fun for somebody that loves sports. So I think we are figuring out a way, realizing that these people, even though they make mega bucks, just really have a spiritual hunger in their own lives, because that's the way we were built.
Well, that's because, yeah, they're ordinary people. And part of what I think maybe what sports, what's so kind of odd about sports is, especially professional sports, these people are definitely celebrities, and you get to the whole idea of people owning a team. Something about, especially in Christian circles, that, like, you know, buying into people's celebrity just feels like, well, if you want to paint it really badly, like idol worship or whatever. But there's something wonderful about sort of appreciating, you know, good stories and, you know, people kind of trying to do the right thing or positive things or whatever. You get to, I guess, live vicariously through other people, which is also probably where part of this passion comes from. And that's something that can be a healthy thing to an extent.
Yeah. One of the things that drives me a little bit crazy, though, is when people just latch on to a player because he's a person of faith, a Christian. First of all, I think they put a heavy burden on that particular person. And it's fine. It's fine that they have an affection for him. We find affection for all kinds of people. But then they can do no wrong.
They put so much stock, like poor old Tim Tebow.
Yeah,
is he still playing in the NFL?
No, okay. You know what, John? He's playing in a minor league system.
Baseball.
Really?
His first pitch.
So he's like the Michael Jordan of NFL.
But the first pitch he ever got in a pro game, he hit it out of the park.
Oh, well, good for him.
I know. I thought that was good.
But he's a great example of people putting a whole lot of stock and one athlete and then kind of getting mad and saying, well, he was discriminated against because he didn't make it in pro football.
Well,
it's hard to accept the fact that he wasn't good enough for that.
It's kind of like the whole, at least it calls to my mind that example of like the professor like dropping the chalk or whatever. There's like this student, this may or may not be apocryphal, I have no idea if this ever happened, but there's this story where this one student is feeling like Christian students being discriminated by the professor, and the professor's like, well, I'm going to drop this chalk, and if, you know, your God really exists, it's not going to break. And well, as the story goes, anyway, he drops it and it like lands on his shoe or something, and it's fine. But anyway, by taking this sort of stand or attachment, you're putting a lot more stock than probably should be put in any one single event to either prove or disprove the existence of God. You know, if God's real, Tim Tebow, Tom Tebow?
Tim. Oh, yeah, that's right.
I'm thinking of Tom Thibodeau. I can't help myself. But anyway, you know, if he, you know, does bad, that means, you know, Satan is really holding sway in the world. I mean, I'm sure plenty of people don't think that, but anyway.
Well, and I think there's another thing in all this, too, when you think of the, you know, the power of sport. You know, you get somebody like Colin Kaepernick, you know.
Yes. Oh, that's a good example.
You know, that, you know.
So for those who aren't sports big fans, tell who that is.
He's a quarterback. He's played San Francisco. At the University of Nevada, Go Wolfpack, and and then played for the, you know, 49ers. Plays for the 49ers. And because of his affinity to the Black Lives Matters movement, he took a knee during the national anthem, and that just stirred up a controversy.
Elicited a firestorm on social media.
A firestorm. And we don't know quite what to do with that. You know, personally, as somebody who studied political science in his youth and has been a fan of that, protest is part, you know, it's part of the fabric of, you know, our life as a country. Mm-hmm. And I'm one of those folks that I do see injustice in our country. So when I stand to sing the national anthem, which I do, I'm grateful for all the good things that our country stands for. But my heart kneels these days because I know that there's so much that isn't quite right. And here's a guy that just took this stand. And because he was a sports person, because he was a quarterback, because he was...
I think it was maybe less about him being a sports person than a celebrity. People know who Kaepernick is.
Sure, it's all wrapped up into that.
All right. Exactly. And I got to give a shout out to the NBA for just before the season tipped off, they had some sort of public forum, probably isn't the right word, but they had this gathering of various athletes, past and present, talking about what they call the segment Sports in Society and what role sports has and so in protest movements and that kind of thing, which I thought was a good thing to do. And it's one worth thinking about because a lot of people, as you know, we just use the instance of Tim Tebow, but all sorts of athletes command all sorts of respect from all sorts of people. And so I can't not say this, with great power does come great responsibility. So yeah. Shout out to Spider-Man. it's very true. And so, you know, a lot of times in the past, I think, according to Bill Simmons, the author of this wonderful book about the history of the NBA, players like Bill Russell in the 60s were faulted for not really taking any sort of stand on, or maybe not any sort of stand, but as much of a stand on racial issues at the time when the league was like entirely white. And Bill Russell, the winningest sports figure like ever, could have potentially done so much more. And so what sort of responsibility do these athletes have to do something?
Any public figure.
Yeah, right.
Sport.
Especially in baseball, which led the way to all kinds of things. Jackie Robinson coming into the big leagues was huge. And, you know, I urge people, if they've never read anything about Jackie Robinson and Branch Rickey and that whole story, you know, to take a look at a movie
Was 42 any good? Was
it
good?
I didn't see it.
It was good. Because
I ask because the other day I saw it in the $5 movie bin somewhere, and that usually to me says it was a bad movie.
It had its flaws, but I think what it got to, John, is what a bold move the Dodgers took, a necessary move, to say we're going to break this color barrier, and that was not without its problems itself. I'm not saying that. And then what Jackie Robinson had to endure to make that happen. There's one scene in 42, especially, where the opposing manager just rips into Jackie Robinson with every racial epithet that you can imagine. And you cringe while you watch that. And so I think what sports does, it's always a part of the history of our country. You know, you just see it. It rallies people when they need to be rallied. And also there's just been some brave moves that have been made. And then there's been a lot of cowardice where people have been afraid to lose money by doing something.
And I'll throw in here, we've talked about a variety of issues, you know, Colin Kaepernick and the racial issue earlier on, but domestic violence in the NFL. There's another
huge
issue that has maybe not been handled as well as it should be. Well, could be, should be.
Oh, definitely.
You know, so yeah, I get back to your comment, with great power comes great responsibility too, because people are paying attention and watching. And
there is power in sport, isn't it?
Yeah.
And then, you know, John, you and Anita and I had a chance to go to Uganda and Kenya together, and every village we went into, what did we see kids doing? They're all playing soccer, right?
Yeah.
And if we were in a cab with somebody, a driver, and even if we couldn't speak Swahili, which I'm weak, my Swahili's weak these days, you'd point at a stadium you'd go by and talk soccer, and somehow or another you'd have some sort of conversation about it, because it becomes a universal language. And anytime there's a universal language, I think I want to learn that. Because it helps build a bridge to other people.
Right, and it's that sort of thing. As someone that has a variety of kind of fringe interests in the Civil War, metal music, and even the NBA, not as many people are big NBA fans as they are either baseball or football, at least it seems anyway. So as someone with lots of fringe interests, one of my least favorite things is when people just sort of discount your interests and they're like, oh, well, you know, that's not really my thing. I don't really care to really learn much about it, which, especially in the case of metal, I totally get. Metal's definitely not for everyone. Whatever. That's fine. But with just discounting sort of the passion that sports can produce and what sort of a universal language it can be, it really sometimes frustrates me when people are like, well, I don't really care much about sports, and they don't really care much to learn. They don't, you know, people don't have to be into sports, but I appreciate it when people acknowledge that it means a lot to some people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does. Mm-hmm. It does. You know, they're willing to talk about it. I remember on that trip we took to Africa, we were in the company of some Kiwis, folks from New Zealand.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And we probably had an 11-hour tutorial on cricket.
That's right. That's right.
You know, throughout the thing, and both of us understand still nothing about it. But that was their passion, and so mm-hmm. when it's something somebody else's passion, it's kind of fun to enter into that, to say, I want to learn about you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, speaking about fringe interests, another of my great interests is anime. And there's a fantastic line from a sports anime that I was watching not too long ago. And one of the characters was saying that one of the worst things you can do is to not be passionate about something that someone is really passionate about with them. I didn't phrase that very well, but that was kind of the gist of what they were saying.
So is that why you're kindly sort of helping us root for the Cubs?
Well, that might be putting it strongly. I can't wholeheartedly root against them, but it's just so hard to root for them.
That's all right. We'll do
but
that.
You care about your mom.
I guess.
And Sarah's turning to our side. I could see it. Speaking of metal music, I understand that you've written a song for the wedding, or you used to have one verse for it that you're going to sing at for your mom. And when you guys do you're going to insert it in the song that you and your mom are dancing to.
Maybe.
What is that, John?
I don't know. I don't know if I should divulge it.
Step back from the mic.
Step way back from the mic.
Yeah. So... This is a collaborative effort between Mike and I.
Oh, man.
I apologize.
And if you've never heard metal,
I apologize
or screamo,
so much
you're about
that
ready.
Mike is making me do this. Right. But anyway, I want the world to know.
Here we go.
Here we go. I love my mama! And I'm translating that he said, I love my mama.
Can't believe that made it onto the podcast.
We worked really hard on that.
Wow.
Spent a lot of time in the studio.
So if anybody is interested in that song, you can just contact either myself or John, and we could release the rights to it for a fee.
Yeah. I can see the emails.
But this will be featured at John and Sarah's wedding.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, maybe not.
Well, maybe not.
That's
Sarah's
hilarious.
Cringing here.
Yeah. That's great. Oh, man. Well, that was a lot of... good talk on sports.
There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Well, anything else? Anyone want to raise another topic before we?
Do you want to raise another topic?
It doesn't matter.
It's your podcast.
I'm game if you are. Sure.
You're pointing at something else here. So, Mike, talk. Let's talk about unexpected events or expenditures. How do you handle that gracefully? Or is it possible to handle such a thing gracefully?
And let me insert this. So, Mike, before when you're talking about standing for the national anthem, kneeling in your heart, that harkened back to one of your Friday rumblings that you wrote.
Yes, it does.
Yeah. And so Mike does this thing every Friday. He writes, it's called his rumblings. And they're on Facebook, and you can find Mike and friend him on Facebook. They're very thoughtful, thought-provoking, sometimes challenging. But we're definitely worth reading. So I just wanted to say that. And I think this past Friday, I think you also mentioned something about expenses, unexpected.
Yeah, I did. You know, we're in the midst of selling our house. We're kind of trying to do something different, downsizing quite a bit. And all of a sudden, we just ran into some unexpected expenses, things we didn't even think were going to be on the radar. And it just went, oh. And it's just hard. It depends where you're coming from. For some people, the amount of money, it's nothing. But, you know, for me, it just felt, oh, this is another thing that's just piling on. And I think what my tendency to do is to fret and worry about such things.
It's easy to do.
It is easy to do. And the reason I do it, as I tell people, is because it works. Because most of the things I worry about never really come to full fruition. So wow. it's a good thing.
Interesting
That's a loose definition of it works.
Yeah, yeah. I was thinking the same thing, John. Yeah.
But in a more truer sense, what it does is it just completely weighs you down. You worry mm-hmm. and you fret about things, and that's all you do. And so is there another way of going after it? And I think that there is. And I think
there definitely is.
Well, I'm thinking, what might scripture say?
Well, I think Jesus gives us a call. He says, come to me, all you are who are weary and heavy laden, and I'm going to give you rest. So there's a thing. Here's what worry is. Worry is all about our personal control. Mm. We're going to take care of it. It's got to be us. It's all about us. It's all about our answers.
But there are things that we often need to do to address these sort of issues, and that's why they feel so overwhelming in the first place.
Yes,
true.
Which you've been helping us do in one of the issues.
Mm-hmm. Free labor.
Yeah. And yes, you're right, John. There's things we have to do, and so we do that. But do we also give it over to God? Because worry ultimately is about our personal control over our own life. Trust is saying we think our life belongs to God, and maybe he can direct our steps, maybe along similar paths with a to-do list, but his is about release, not control.
Right. So how would you go about, if you know you're going to go about downsizing and selling a house and whatnot? You obviously need to do things for that to happen, and unexpected things come up. These things need to be addressed if that's going to happen. So how do you go about taking personal action while also surrendering control? How does that work out?
I think that's really an interesting question. I think it starts with prayer. And what I do is, the other night, I was actually up at 3 a.m., you know, I awakened, and I was up till about 5. And the whole thing was, I was saying to the Lord over and over again, Lord, I want to just turn this stuff over to you. It's not that I know there's stuff that I got to do. And when I woke up that morning, what I did is I said, okay, I don't think my faith is weak, but it's wobbly, you know, right now. And so I personally sent out an email to 20 guys that I know and just said, this is what's going on. Will you pray for me? And so what I was trying to do, this is one of my theories in life. There's times when, even if you're an old fart like me, you need to hitchhike off other people's faith because you just don't feel like yours is strong enough. And that's what happened. I got calls and emails and texts saying, yeah, we're with you. Two or three people said, hey, I know how to fix this. I know how to fix that. I'll be over. Don't worry about it. You know, let it go. And it was almost like God was saying, see? But the answer to prayer is oftentimes those we tell about what's really going on, because God's really doing that in their lives.
The power of community.
Yes.
Yes, a deep power of community. And it's funny, you know, for years I just resisted that. And I remember one night when we had our sump pump, just making all kinds of crazy noises. And I called a friend of mine who just knows stuff, you know. He's a guy that knows stuff. And he came over and says, you need a new one. And I said, oh, I don't even know what to get or how to go about doing that. He says, don't worry, I got it covered. And on the way out the door, he just turned to me and he said, it's about time. I said, what do you mean? It's about time, he called. He says,
and asked for
help.
Thank you for finishing the sentence.
Yeah, it's about time you call and ask for help. And he was right. And I've called him now two or three times, and I said, you open the door to that.
Be careful what you ask for.
Yeah, you know, and there's sometimes when you face with stuff that if you've never been trained to do it, and if I'm not never been trained to be a handyman, I just break things, and. You know, and I'm great. If somebody needs a sermon written, I'll write it for them. You know, but usually people aren't knocking
on
my door.
Right.
Yeah. In the zombie apocalypse.
Yes. me and my roommate talk often about how few useful transferable skills we have as history majors. we can read a lot of stuff. We can
tell people about it.
Some things. Yeah. Man. Anyway,
John, it still has
value. You can give a
mean tour. Because without the liberal arts, then we'd have nothing but science nerds with us. And what happens?
That would be just
mean look from Sarah at the table.
Who's going to enlarge their perspective, and that's what that's what the liberal arts graduates do. So Sarah tells us we have bad things going on in our body.
Right.
Great. No, that's good. Well, yeah, I think all of you probably are identifying. Well, I'm sure each of you is identifying with one of the topics, two topics today, maybe both, but certainly this last one. I mean, difficult things come into all of our lives, and the issue really comes down to how do we engage, respond? Do we reach out to the community that we're a part of? Do we have a community?
Well, sure.
Right? That's big. That's not a small question.
But even going back to the, because I've walked, I mean, 1 year I went to 180 games, you know, with my kids.
With your kids. Okay. Yeah.
And,
wow. That's a lot of games.
Yes.
And one of the guys that I would run across from an opposing club who was a friend of mine, he says, you know, we should just, on Sunday mornings when we're at this tournament, we should just have a worship service out here for people.
Hmm.
And we never did that. And I wish we would have, or you just grab two or three people and say, hey, can we just, between games here, can we just grab 15 minutes, talk about what God's doing in our lives, read a scripture, and just pray together. That's a creative way of kind of approaching this dilemma. And I'm not saying that replaces going to your local church. I'm not saying that at all. However, there are all kinds of ways to worship and praise God with other people if we give it a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And while the structure is a wonderful thing, sometimes, well, I guess I might even argue that some sort of structure is essential, but the structure, there are other ways of doing things than exclusively the Sunday morning church service.
The traditional way.
Yeah.
Though wonderful it is.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, if you look at everything as having the possibility of being holy, just about every gathering can have something that's really redemptive about it. And you can walk away going, I saw God. I mean, your mom and I had dinner with a couple of friends kind of spontaneously last night. And it was really good. You know, we saw something of God, even though the waitress was a Sox fan and she
heckled Mike.
But she heckled me.
Even from across the room, it was great. You would have loved it, John.
But even then, that was such a good thing because I'd built a relationship with her, and your mom has too. Well, she knew she could joke with us.
Mm-hmm.
And this person is not a believer at all. And who knows what happens out of those kind of relationships.
Yeah.
Well, and you can be sure that nothing would happen were there not a relationship.
Right.
Yes. Yeah.
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 That's for sure.
If I just leave a track on the table.
One of Sarah Mine's coworkers is, he waits at a Chinese restaurant, and that's, he can't stand when people do that. Some people do that instead of leaving a tip.
And for real? I always think that's a joke. That people, no. I mean, that someone just is joking. That's happens.
A real thing that people do. It's not very frequent, but that does happen sometimes.
Oh, man. Yeah,
I almost think if you're going to leave the track, you give even a bigger tip.
Seriously. Seriously. That just hurts my heart.
Yeah. Well, Anita, I've gone to places with a Christian group and, you know, everybody paid their own bill and whatnot. And I went back to the table, 10 people, and there's $7 in tips. I'm pulling out my wallet.
The optimist in me likes to think maybe they tipped with their cards. You can do that these days.
No, this was all
cash.
Well, I've got a story about that too, but we don't have time.
I was just going to say, you guys know Melinda, my former co-host.
I do.
Yeah. So she always says, if you pray at a restaurant, automatic 20% minimum. If you bow your head, no less than 20%. Anyway, I love that. But yeah, that's right, I think.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, any closing comments?
Go Final Bulls. Words?
Go Bulls. Go Cubs.
I think we should have Sarah on more often.
I do too. Sarah's in the or at the kitchen table
along with us, minus a microphone.
She's glared a couple times, but so far
as well she should. Well, hey guys, thanks. I really, you know, nice to have you home for a quick week. John was in two weddings a week apart, and so
I miss being down the street from the fire department.
Oh, you did, didn't you? Yeah,
I did.
Yeah. So anyway, good to have you home. Almost gone. And so we thought we'd record a podcast. Well, I'll wrap it up and say I'm Anita Lustria, and this is Faith Conversations.